Well, the friendly group asked him knowingly, "What number have you drawn?" 6 7/8, he said, as he held up the size of the hat. It's true that so many people are like that. When they're really down on their luck, they are really down on their luck. And today, Jesus gives another example of a poor, young, misguided man down on his luck and decides to come back home again. But that story we heard has profound significance. It's a parable that Jesus tells to reflect the profound healing forgiveness that the Father has for each one of us personally all through our lives, that the mercy of the Lord is always without limit, and that we do not have to beg for it nor plead for it any more than the young prodigal had to from his father. The mercy of the Lord is always there. God already has said once and for all to each of us, "I love you and I forgive you." And it never depends upon whether or not we ask for it. There is nothing that you can do to change who God is or the attitude that God always has toward each of us. Any change in our relationship with the living God necessarily takes place within us. Any change takes place within us. And our plea for mercy or forgiveness represents simply our acceptance of the forgiveness that was there all of the time. And the parable story then this afternoon is a revelation that our God is a gracious, understanding, forgiving God. And it means that our attitude toward God in creation should, as a result, change, if it has been anything other than that. And as St. Paul said, each of us is an agent of reconciliation toward each other, reflecting the reconciliation of God toward us. And all of us in our lives have had many, many experiences of being forgiven generously by other people or in the sacrament of penance. And every time it is always an extraordinarily good feeling. Something very heavy is lifted off. If we have done wrong, it means we may have been mean or petty, cruel, insensitive. We feel that we don't really deserve to be forgiven. And sometimes we also happen to be afraid even to ask to be forgiven. For the other person forgives us just the same, without any strings attached, without any kind of punitive little digs afterwards, without animosity, without that terrible sense of self-righteousness. We are forgiven by that other person because we are loved by that other person. And so once more in our life, the slate is wiped clean, and we know it. And that's why our spirits rise up and we feel so good. Because now we know that once again, we can start all over. And what is so fascinating is that the peculiar thing about such forgiveness is that it always enhances, enriches the personality and the character of both the forgiver and the person who is forgiven. That mysterious something happens to both. Both people the forgiver and the one forgiven always become, from that moment on, better human beings. Because now they are caught up in this mysterious exchange of loving generosity. And the cause of the offense, you might almost say, could be called a happy fault. A happy fault because of the fault, there now is a new kind of warmth, a recognition of reconciliation and love that is even stronger now than that which existed before the fault had been committed in the first place. Now, while it is always a marvelous experience to be spontaneously and generously forgiven by someone, we are always so reluctant to extend that forgiveness on our part to another person. Why is that? Deep down, after we are hurt, we want to punish. And we always want to get that 1 pound of flesh. We always first want to get even. And we want to force the other person, before we forgive them, to apologize to us. We want that other person to admit he or she was wrong, and we were right, and that eventually, before we forgive, we understand that we are justified, and we are vindicated, and we are triumphant. But the real reason is that we are all so terribly afraid of the vulnerability that forgiveness induces. Because we know in our heart of hearts that if we just even forgive once, if we forgive someone without punishment, without any kind of vengeance, without even trying to get even, then what we do is we leave ourselves wide open to being hurt at least once more by that same person. And that's why we feel we need self-protection. That kind of vulnerability, that kind of being open to being hurt again, does not seem to be worth the task. We feel it is good to be forgiven, but we also know how very risky it is to forgive, to take the initiative. Now, during all of these Sundays of Lent, the springtime of the Spirit, we have spoken directly and indirectly about the relationship each of us has with the beloved other. In your life, there is a beloved other. For almost all of you, it is a spouse, a parent, a child, a good friend. But someone in your life who is the principal person who represents God in our life. That's what Paul was talking about. There's someone or some people in our lives who represent the living God, calling to us, inviting us, representing the invitation that God holds out to forgive. That we extend the same forgiveness to the other beloved that has been extended to us. Whenever there's any kind of intimate relationship, spontaneous forgiveness is simply a medium of exchange between the two people. That is the very basis, quite often, of their intimate relationship. That's what Paul was speaking of. And if it is not spontaneous, generous, open, vulnerable, without ever counting the cost, without ever trying to get even, then forgiveness simply will not be what it really must be if common life between the loved and the beloved is to be maintained. Forgiveness is not an option for the beloved. Whenever there's an intimate other person, it is not an option to forgive or not to forgive. It is always a necessity. We must forgive the other, and the other must be ready to forgive us in return. And it's not as if we were cashing traveler's checks. It's not that kind of an exchange. But the way that two people in love constantly show their love for each other is by continually, throughout their lifetimes, forgiving the mistakes and the errors, the harshness, the insensitivities, that is always an ongoing part of an intimate relationship, be it marriage, be it friendship, be it parental and children. And here is why the practical application of today's story is so disturbing. Whenever it is seen as it is seen today in the context of the call of the beloved other person in our life, who acts always as a representative of the living God to us. That if God is willing to bestow continually such total, complete, healing forgiveness upon us, it means that we in turn must always be willing to offer the same forgiveness to those whom we love. And more than that, it is precisely because we do live in this world that has been created by such a benign, healing, merciful Lord, that we are able to have the confidence and the peace that is always necessary to forgive others, particularly those whom we do love very deeply.